All right, welcome to part two of the Del Close episode. Enjoy.
Part two is awesome!
Well, I think what Del was teaching, from what I've heard, and what every improv teacher who I've had that's good, is the concept, and I kind of hinted on this last time about stand-up, but is ultimately just being a ninja, being able to respond without thinking.
Right.
And I think that's where, like, when you see, like, Stephen Colbert and his show, you know, he's doing those interviews, and he's doing, and everything is so true to that character, because he's established who that character is, and now he knows how to respond to anything you throw at him, because he's gotten his head around who that character is and what that character believes and feels, and you never catch him. I mean, every once in a while he'll laugh and stuff like that if something's completely ridiculous. But, I mean, I've honestly never heard him say anything out of character or respond in a way that wasn't true to who Stephen Colbert, the TV show character, is. I mean, I've seen him speak as a Stephen Colbert, the dude, and he's not like that at all. Still very, very funny, but he's not. It's not him, obviously.
Right. Yeah. That's actually a great example. If you want to see some great improv, the Stephen Colbert interviews, because that's basically what he's doing. He's doing an improv scene, except the other person is a real person. They're not an improviser. So he is. You know, there's that other person isn't like, oh, I know how I'll set him up. They're just talking, and he is everything they send over. He's just lobbing back. You know, perfectly. I mean, that is a perfect example of an improv scene. And if the other great thing about improv is, well, there's many great things about improv, but one great thing about improv is your job at an improv scene is to make the other guy look good, or the other girl look good. And their job is to make you look good. And so instead of this sort of ego, like, oh, I gotta, you know, I'm saying something funny, you're saying something funny, you're setting them up, making them look awesome, and they're making you look awesome, and together you're looking twice as awesome, you know.
Because it is, a lot of it is a game of, I hate to use the word game after making fun of it before, but it is that concept of, like, whatever you do, don't do this, because that upsets me.
Right.
Everybody goes, okay, clearly that's what I must be doing now.
Right.
And, you know. It's fun when that happens.
Yeah, and it's a great sense of give and take, where if what you're on stage, what you're thinking is, I want to make the other person look better.
Yeah.
What I would like is to hear your experiences in improv and what you took away from it, from learning and performing it, and what you're still taking away from
it. Yeah. Well, when I first started, I was awful. As everyone
most
is,
people are, yeah.
It was frustrating and annoying, and playing all those, like, you know, games that try and get you out of your head made me nuts. And I kept, nothing felt right when I was doing it, and I never really got it until years later. Like, I'd done plenty of improv, and I'd performed on house teams and stuff like that. And then I saw, again, I hate to use another example from someone in the New York scene who you may not know out there, but an improviser by the name of Will Hines.
Yes.
Will's a very funny improviser, and hopefully everyone out there will see him on TV one day, because he definitely deserves to be there. But Will, I'm going to say, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, isn't an actor. He's an improviser.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel a similar way about myself, is that I don't do characters, I don't do voices, I don't, you know, do this thing. I just kind of tend to respond in the way that I would respond with whatever conceit is necessary. And I never felt okay about that until I saw Will. I saw him do it, and I saw him do it well. And it was finally at that point that both I realized for myself that it was okay to just be you and respond the way that you wanted. And I saw how much funnier it was when somebody does that.
Mm.
how he really solidified that concept of the true thing that we were talking about earlier. And it's helped me, I think, as a performer to do it, to do improv, partially for ideas, although not so much. I think I tend to be a little bit heady about stuff sometimes. But I think it's helped me in the way that, that it's just more freeing. It's just, the concept of just being able to go out there and make something cool. Yeah, I mean, that's been my reaction, my feeling about improv is that I've seen it be a beautiful thing, and I'm always constantly impressed with people who can just make that happen. There used to be a group here in the city, who called Evil Cathedral, who hosted a show called Ash Wednesday.
Yes.
And it was three improvisers who performed together every single week. They performed hundreds and hundreds of shows together, or at least 100 shows together. And they were good friends, and they hung out, and you could tell when you saw them improvise. And they were one of the few groups that I actually saw get serious. They weren't afraid to have those moments of no laughs. And I think with a lot of comedy in general, people are so afraid of the silence and so afraid of getting serious about things. And to me, often the beauty is getting serious and then finding the humor in it. And it's that type of stuff that I think comedy should aspire to. And I was thrilled by the fact that they did that. And not always. I mean, sometimes it was just, hey, who can fart the loudest? But it was one of the few times where I saw people take all the aspects of humanity and make it into an art form. And, I think as a comedian, I think you learn from all the stuff that you see out there and hopefully try and incorporate it. And I think, even though improv is the thing that I probably do the least, it's helped me be able to get in touch with the humanity of stuff. And I think when people can relate to what you're doing, then that's the stuff that they're going to like the best. Because who's the dude on Mad TV, that character, Stewart. I mean, it's funny and people laugh about it, but I don't think it's one of those things that anybody relates to, or anybody like admires. They laugh at it, but I think for me, comedy should be something that you can also admire. That's why somebody like a Bill Cosby was, so far ahead of other comedians, because you could definitely see, it was definitely a truth where he was coming from. And I think that's what people should do. But that I just got really deep for no good reason.
No,
I
I
apologize.
was actually was going to continue getting deep, and I was going to say, first of all, it's an excellent point that, improv, it's a big thing, man. And it can take you years to kind of to crack it. You could be a good improviser and you can be funny, but you could be literally doing it for 5 years until, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand what it's all about. And I hear people I look up to like crazy saying like, well, I gotta get better at this. I gotta get better at that. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're amazing. I've never seen someone better than you on stage, but you're constantly learning and you're constantly trying to get over that next hump. And I understand. And sometimes it's tough. It can be very frustrating and you can get stuck. And I got stuck a few times and I couldn't quite figure out what I was supposed to be doing to
But
get to that next level.
how do you mean, like, what define that?
Well, I guess okay. Now you've asked me a big question. And I have to think for a second. Sort of like for instance, I was in this show, we were doing the movie, which is another thing that Del Close had invented,
Okay.
which is,
Explain that for
yeah,
you.
I'm going to, I'm
Okay.
getting to it. with a group called The Family. They had been doing improv, you know, or now improv is sort of out in the world and people were doing it and stuff. And they what they wanted to do was come up with a way to do an improvised movie, but use all the things that movies can do, like close-ups, like cutaways, like, you know, whatever. An opening credit sequence, special effects. And so they came up with ways of doing that live on stage. And a lot of times that was, you know, descriptions where you would put your hands up in a box and go, okay, now we're close up on his face. And you know, everyone just had to imagine that the rest of the stage wasn't there. And it actually is pretty effective. Well, anyway, it's a really tough form to do because not only do you have to be a character or several characters and do your sort of improv stuff, you also have to keep in mind the plot of the movie and where it's going. And you have to get to a general or a genuine like movie ending. You know, you can't just kind of like do an improv ending where it's kind of craziness or whatever. And it was tough, man. I almost was just like, maybe I'm not cut out for this. Cause I just wasn't like, I just wasn't getting it. Like I was thinking too much about the plot of the movie and my character work was really, you know, suffering. And I just wasn't being that funny. And it, like the last show, I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to go out there. I'm not going to worry about the plot. Like, it doesn't matter, you know? And I just went out there and I just played this character and I just, you know, didn't think about where things were going and whatever happened. I just sort of reacted to. And of course it all worked out beautifully and it was the best plot and it was the best movie-like movie we ever did, that last show. And definitely my best, you know, where I just reacted and it was a murder mystery. And I didn't think like, oh, who's the murderer? I got to figure it out. Like, what's going on? It just, everything worked out perfectly. And all these clues that we had laid out that we were not in any way thinking about all perfectly added up in the end. And it was awesome. And then the next thing I did after that was a show called, there's a famous, very highly regarded group here in New York called Mother. And they had a...
Which James Eason, who I referred to earlier, James is a
Eason,
member of.
Yes. And James Eason taught... directed this show. And it was they invented a form called that they called the sleepover. And the idea was to do it like a one of those choose your own adventure books where you would sort of be given a choice, the character would be given a choice and he would choose to go one way and that's kind of the way the story would go. And then you would get to another fork in the road and you would choose that to go that way. And we did that show and that was by far the pinnacle of my improv career. And I, in the span of like a few weeks of being like, maybe I should just stop doing improv because I'm just terrible at it. And I mean, I had some like really shows, like I was embarrassed. I like pretty much apologized to the people on the stage. Like, look guys, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on. Too big, like, and then we did the sleepover and it was awesome. And our show was called Pajama Party, which was a reference to the form. It was called the sleepover. And it was great. And again, it was, I started doing things that like, for instance, I would get to the theater like an hour before the show and I would warm up, you know, because I've done like acting and stuff in college and that's what you teach you, you know, you got to warm up, do your vocal exercises and stretch and everything. And so I would do all that and get mentally prepared. And by the time I got on stage, it's like I was overly prepared. And I started doing things like showing up to the theater 2 minutes before the show started. And it wasn't because I didn't care, because I was being a jerk. I just didn't want to overthink it. Yeah. I just literally wanted to walk off the street, walk right on stage, and just start doing it. And not have a chance to think about it. And just be totally, like, you know, blank when I stepped on stage. And when I actually, the example I was talking about, when you're not trying to be funny, and you end up getting the biggest laugh, and also what you were saying was, the great thing about improv is, you can do anything. It doesn't even have to be funny. I mean, obviously, we use it for comedy, and most of the people we know use it for comedy. You don't have to do that. But a lot of times, I think even if you're trying to do serious improv, you're going to end up getting laughs, whether you want to or not. Because that's what life is. You know, it's sad and it's funny. And then there's comedy in the sadness and in the darkness and stuff. And that moment... one of the moments that I always think about when I wasn't trying to be funny was I was doing this scene with a fellow improviser, and she was we were talking about, I was her father, and her mother had died, and she had sort of had this mental breakdown and had been at a mental institution for a few years and had just come back and was now living at home again. And I was like, you know, oh, it's great to have a woman's touch around the house again. You know, this place was a mess, you know, since your mother died and you were gone. And she goes off on this really dark monologue about her mother dying and, you know, and her having this breakdown and being an institution and how, you know, bad it was and everything. And you can hear a pin drop in the audience, man. And it was really serious. Like, it was a really emotive, like, serious scene. And she finished this whole monologue. And I was at the refrigerator, the fake refrigerator, and I just put the orange juice away and closed the door. And I just went, well, whatever it is, the upstairs looks fantastic. And I wasn't trying to be funny. Like, I really wasn't. I just was sort of going along because my character was totally oblivious to what was going on. I'd already set that up. And I mean, the place just exploded, you know, and it was awesome, you know, and it was one of those miracle improv things. And again, you know, that moment wouldn't have come if she had started that monologue and I was like, yeah. Oh geez, this is serious. I better fart. And that'll, you know, that'll kind of lighten things up a little bit. If I had been afraid and, you can walk through. This is podcasting. We're not in a professional studio. Dustin's fiance just walked through the room, which is fine.
Through the studio,
through our awesome professional studio. But if that's what kind of what I was doing in the movie, which is where I was screwing up, which I was like, oh, I gotta do something funny. I gotta, you know, get on top of this, and don't be afraid to just write it. Yeah. Well, see where it goes.
Well, to get deep into this, and I apologize if we lose any non-improvised people here, although we probably lost you 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I tend to prefer the form that you're referring to, the movie form. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do a similar form in the improv group that I'm in.
Right.
In that, it's a 45-minute linear story where you know the point that you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. You know, not that you know the point you're trying to get to, but like, you know that there's something that we're going to set up in the beginning that we have to get to at the end. But we do it 45 minutes to an hour.
Right.
As opposed to your typical, for improv tends to be a 20-minute, 30-minute form on average. Most forms are set up that way. And I so prefer the 45 minute to an hour because you don't feel that pressure. Because in a 20-minute form, as much as you don't want to push plot, you feel like, yes, if I have to get to the end of it, something's got to go down. Right. Something's got to happen. Whereas with a 45-minute to an hour form, you can spend the first half an hour, 30 minutes, just developing who these people are, just getting a concept and getting your audience sort of vested in these folks before anything even really happens to them, so that when you do need to take it up a notch and when, you know, A has to get to point B eventually, it can be more organic and you can care.
Right.
And I wonder if the 20 or 30 minute form that has become, you know, all the rage in the improv community is selling that out a little bit, is sort of commercializing it, you know, maybe. Or maybe it's just making it easier for people who aren't great at it. I don't know.
I mean, I think the Herald is...
The Herald is a 30-minute form.
Right. But what I'm saying is I think the Herald is... I don't want to short sell it. I was going to say it's kind of like a Training Wheels improv thing, mm-hmm. or it's kind of like Scales on the guitar. And that's not really true, but it's along those lines, which is, it's where you start. Mm-hmm. And it's the most rule-heavy of the forms, because there are three scenes, and then a game, and then three scenes, and then a group game, and then, you know, it's very like boom, 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 boom. And it's the first thing they teach you. And there's nothing wrong with it. And you can certainly sit down, and I've seen mind-blowingly good Heralds that have the relationships and have all those characters and have a real emotional feel to it. But you're right in that I think most people start with the Herald and then move on to something else.
this. What I found interesting, is I've seen the Herald both here in New York, and I went to Chicago and I saw them do it at I.O.
Mm-hmm.
Improv Olympic, yes. Which I don't think it's called that anymore, is it? I know. I thought they had to change their name because of the Olympics.
Get the hell out of here.
I'm pretty sure they did.
But they've been there like 40 years.
I know.
How could they possibly...
But the Olympics are bigger.
Oh, that is ridiculous.
I'm pretty sure. We'll look it up after this and get back to you.
I have no idea.
But that's... I'm pretty sure they had to change it.
Well, now I'm utterly outraged
I'm sorry.
About it.
Anyway, I saw it there. And the thing is, in New York, the basic conceit is if I see persons one and two in the first scene of a Herald, then I will see persons one and two in the second scene, and they will play a similar game. Whereas in the I.O. version of it, if I saw persons one and two in the first scene, then I saw persons one and four in the first scene of the second one.
Okay.
So that you saw all, you know... Like what the is characters. It? All six characters.
Yeah.
But none of them were in the scenes with their original partner.
Right.
Which I thought added. I thought added to it because it created a situation where it was now all about the characters and the way that they play with people. And yes, they had their games, and I wonder how their games are going to play with each other. Whereas I feel like the New York version of it kind of makes it so you could sell out the characters completely. And just, you know, make it all about the game. So I think it's even more training wheels in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can just, if somebody farted too much in the first scene, you can just make them fart again in the second scene.
Right.
And, you know, except this time, they're the king and the queen farting. And the next scene, they're right. Two astronauts farting in a chamber where you farts yeah. Can't escape. And, yeah, I mean, that's funny, but it's not... art, I guess.
Right. But, I mean, I think the Herald is, again, you know, you can, two people can pick up a guitar, and Eric Clapton can play something that'll make you weep, and, you know, some Joe off the street can play Mary Had a Little Lamb on it. You know, I mean, the Herald is just a form, and what counts is what you do with it, you know? And I think you're right, to get back to Dell. I listened to an excellent podcast called The Sound of Young America, and in preparation for this. And a few years ago, there was an all Del Close episode.
Why do you get to point out all the preparation that you've done?
I'm not. I'm just saying.
And I've done no preparation. But that's how I roll, people.
You're
going to discover that.
You're off the cuff.
Yeah, that I just show up.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. You know. Look, I need to prepare. You can, mm-hmm. you're just awesome. You can just do it.
Uh-huh.
I need to sit down and figure stuff out before I start talking.
We're going to put that on the website. That quote is going to be there.
But I think, so I listened to an interview with Ian Roberts, who's a member of the Upright Citizens Brigade. Another thing we should say real quick is the Upright Citizens Brigade was Ian Roberts, Matt Walsh, Amy Poehler, and I forgot his name, Matt.
Besser,
thank you. And they trained under Dell
mm-hmm.
and brought his ideas to New York.
Yeah.
And started their own theater and started training people. And a lot of people, including people like Paul Scheer, who's on Human Giant now.
Yeah, pretty much all of the Human Giant.
Right.
With the exception of Aziz.
Well, Aziz was a stand-up who was involved in
yeah.
The UCB community. But they were trained by the Upright Citizens Brigade, who were teaching them the things that Dell had taught them, and they went on to teach other people, and it was sort of this, you know, idea of spreading the message.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, went from this this little storefront theater... which,
it's still a storefront theater.
Right. But I'm saying this, you know, this little...
Or basement theater. Basement theater. Now.
To basically an institution now, you know, and something that can't be ignored in the New York comedy scene. And
if you guys want to put that on your website, by the way, if you're out there, UCB.
I think they may have slightly better quotes from slightly bigger and more influential people, I'm going to guess. than me. But if they want to put me on there, they're more than welcome.
I meant like us.
They are
the comedy nerds. I don't know why it's always got to be about you.
They're an absolute institution. Right. Well, both of us. No. I mean, because if you had said it, you have the clout.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
That's
I carry weight.
But you're also, you parse your words because you're not going to throw that kind of stuff around because people will put it on their website.
No, and yeah. And I'm
you,
a jerk.
You withhold praise. So I was listening to this interview with Ian Roberts talking about though. And he had even said that by the time he was working with Dell, Dell was getting a little tired of the Herald and the other forums and was just trying to see where else this could go. And he talks about, much like you're saying your James Easton story, Ian took a class with Dell. And again, you know, it's X amount of dollars for, you know, it's a money and time investment. And all they did for like the first couple of classes was just chant for 3 hours. And what was really interesting was that the interviewer, you know, asked, like, well, when you're doing this, did you ever think, well, maybe the old guys just lost it. Uh-huh. Maybe, like, you know, whatever. Maybe this means nothing. And it was funny because Ian Roberts is a comedian. He's a really funny guy. And every question that was asked, it's sort of a quick, like, you know, wise-ass response to. And this is the one time he didn't. He was amazingly referential. And to the point where I almost like sat up and I was like, wow, that was so weird. Because he said, like, did you think, you know, that the old guy had lost it and maybe this didn't mean anything? And he's like, no. I totally trusted Dell and I would totally follow him. And Dell taught me you can't be afraid to try something new. You know? And the chanting thing, maybe it didn't, you know, maybe it helped, maybe it didn't. And maybe if it had been awesome, we'd be talking about chant prof right now, you know? That's sweeping the nation. But you can't be afraid to try something. And, you know, and it developed this group mind within the class. And then when they started on the fourth week, when they started actually doing improv, all of a sudden everyone's game was totally, you know, raised to an amazing level by this 3 weeks of chanting that they did, you know. You were going to say something.
Yeah, no, I wonder, because I remember hearing a story about Dell regarding because he would just walk right out of the theater sometimes.
Right.
Because if you're somebody who invented a form, you've seen the same scene 20, 30, 40,000 times. Like, as, you know, as a stand-up, I'll go out to shows, and then, you know, a lot of stand-ups that you see in not Carolines are the up-and-comers. Right. You know, are the people who are still writing the material that's going to make them big. And you will hear the same joke so many times. So many variations on the same mediocre idea.
Right.
And Dell, sort of by the end, from what I've heard, like, had no tolerance for that at all. And I think that was good. I almost think that's a good reason to go to older teachers.
Right.
Because they've had the acceptance of the same mediocre crap beaten out of them. Right. You know, I think that's, not to compliment myself here, but I think that's why I tend to, when I'm dealing in sketch, to sort of push people harder, because I've seen so much sketch and I've watched so much of my time that when I know where you're going in the beginning, then I don't care how you get there, because I already know where you're going, right. And it's not surprising and it's not interesting. And I think also that's part of, you know, the kind of stuff that Dell pushed was, if somebody says, hey, that's a great, you know, that's an ugly hat, you saying, well, no, it's not, it's pretty, is the most boring possible response that you can give.
Right.
But by saying, thank you, I appreciate it, it's the most, like, I intentionally bought an ugly hat because of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Then at least it's a scene that I may not have seen 100,000 times.
Right.
So as much, just to sort of correct what we were saying before, there is an honesty that needs to be there, but I think there also, and I think he was pushing this towards the end more so than in the beginning, but you have to take the dangerous choice. You have to take the choice that's not the first, like, you have to take the first thing that comes to your head and then twist it.
Right.
in a way that makes it not be 2.5 men.
Right. Yeah, and again, getting back to what you were saying about, you know, making a breakthrough in improv, that was one of my big breakthroughs, which was within the first 30 seconds, do or say something big. Mm-hmm. Don't keep playing it safe. Do something crazy, throw it out there, and then deal with it. What you don't want to do is throw it out there and then ignore it.
Right.
But throw something crazy out and then spend the rest of the scene, you know, dealing with that aftermath.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the basic idea that a lot of people talk about in improv is why this scene now?
Right.
You know, because...
Why?
Yeah, if you're painting a fence, you know, it's fine that you're painting a fence, but what about painting the fence that day?
Right.
Like, what's different that time?
In this day, in this moment in the character's life, why are we watching it?
Right.
Because this character probably watched TV last night. We don't want to see an hour-long scene about this guy watching TV, and then maybe he gets up and goes to the bathroom at one point. If you're watching this, why are you watching this one moment in this character's life? Something has to happen that's interesting enough that the audience is now, that we brought the audience to see this character at this moment. So yeah, that's definitely a big point of it. I'm sure that's somewhere on my big list of of rules guidelines for improv. But that, I think that was an excellent discussion.
Yeah.
About improv and about Del Close in general. He died in 1999. Just to wrap this up, he had a big party / living wake where the cream of the comedy world came to say goodbye. And his famous last words were, "I'm tired of being the funniest person in the room." And he
it's a cool / douchey thing to say.
Closed his eyes and drifted off into the ether. So, and then they took his skull out of his head and gave it to the Goodman Theater in Chicago, and they use it when they do Hamlet.
Which is so creepy.
Oh, it's so awesome. That's amazing.
I would not want to. Would you really want to do that? Act with a human head? I feel like there's laws. Pretty confident there are laws against that.
No, why would there's no laws? I mean, you can have in medical school, they just have cadavers.
Yeah, for medical reasons, not just hey, let's hang out with bones.
Right.
I think it's weird.
Anyway. He donated. If you just dug up a body and stole their skull, yeah, it'd be against that. But it was in his will that he wanted this to happen. I mean, they cremated him anyway.
I would vote no.
Well, but you, I, anyway. So that was an excellent episode.
Yeah.
I thought we got a lot accomplished. Talked about the things we wanted to talk about.
And if you're still here.
Yeah.
An hour and 15 minutes later.
Well, I think what we're going to do is we're going to break this up into two, possibly more episodes. Maybe we'll even give them a cliffhanger at the end of part one. Got to come back next week for part two. I think that's probably. Yeah.
He says that because he knows I'm editing it.
Yeah. Well, we'll do it together.
Okay.
Why does every episode of this end with a petty fight between us? I think pretty much every episode has ended that way.
People are looking forward to it.
That's our thing now.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So this has been the Comedy Nerds for this week. I'm Dan McInerney.
I'm Dustin Diodato.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
All right.
You've been listening to The Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns you would like us to address, please contact the show at info@thecomedynerds.com. That's info@thecomedynerds.com. Also, be sure to visit us on the web at thecomedynerds.com. Our theme music is by the Santa Marias, and you can find them online at santamariasnyc.com. If you like what you heard here today, won't you please write a review in iTunes and tell all your friends about the show. And if you didn't like what you heard, you can write reviews in iTunes. I don't know where you got that crazy idea. I'm Dan McInerney, and for Dustin and myself, thanks for listening.